Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers, locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Jacksonville gets bigger. Jacksonville gets better. The return of the Stones. I guess they never really left. They just kind of delayed things after Mick Jagger went through that heart procedure. They're coming. It'll be about 2 months from tonight, the official date, July 19th, 2019, the same evening that the Truth Teller begins his final vacation before football gets underway. The players will report late the next week, and I will be off, and by the time the chin straps go on, the shoulder pads go on, I will be back into the fold in very late July as we get ready for Jaguars training camp 2019. Glad to have you with us. An absolutely incredible day again here in Jacksonville, and I got up a lot earlier than I normally do to watch first-round coverage of the PGA Championship, and, you know, I stayed up late last night. Good game between St. Louis and San Jose. Just talked about it with Frank and company. This is really becoming disturbing to me, and it should to you, because we can't get through a major event without there being controversy when it comes to the referees, the officials, the umpires, heck, even the stewards. If we bring up what happened at the Kentucky Derby, even though those will say they got that call right. I just can't think of a time in any period of our lifetime where there have been so many incredibly dramatic, controversial calls that have affected the outcomes of major games. And it all goes back to that NFC Championship game. You can even bring up a couple of situations that happened in the Super Bowl that were wrong calls. Certainly the Chris Jones or the AFC Championship game. And Chris Jones was called for a helmet shot to Tom Brady. It wasn't. He got him in the chest. And then we saw it in the Final Four and the Natty in basketball. And then, you know, we continue to see it in the NBA. All right? We saw it in the quarterfinal round, the five-minute major on a cross check, which was ruled to the face. It was to the chest. Four unanswered goals affected the outcome of that series between Las Vegas and San Jose. Then again last night, I mean, how do you miss a call like this? It was so blatantly obvious. The guy took, I think it was Meyer, took his hand and shoveled it, batted it and shoveled it to a teammate for a game-winning goal last night in sudden-death overtime, Game 3. Just absolutely positively cannot happen. And you have four officials right there, two referees, two linesmen, and all four of them miss it. Just horrible. And I really feel bad. And you can go back to the Miles Jack, and he wasn't down, so Jacksonville's aware of that. That got almost zero play. As a matter of fact, unfortunately, I don't think a lot of football fans really remember that. That's why I was so peeved about the reaction that came out this year in New Orleans between, you know, the Saints and what happened with the Rams. It seemed like everyone had an opinion there, but very few people actually remembered what happened with Miles Jack and the whistle outside of Jacksonville. Now, sometimes things aren't fair. This is a pretty good example of it, but we saw it again last night, and just awful in the great sport of hockey. And you know, a non-reviewable call to the point where the NHL today admitted that they made a mistake. It doesn't do any good to admit that you make a mistake. I mean, that's not noble. That's not honor. That's reprehensible. How could you not have that review available and ready to use something as obvious as a hand pass? It affects Game 3, San Jose up 2-1 in the best of 7. We'll see how that affects. I mean, St. Louis is not, in my opinion, as good as San Jose. San Jose is the better team. But if they have the officials in their back pocket, boy, that is really going to make a dramatic difference again in the Western Conference Finals. All right, so today, get up early. The PGA Tour streams it, and that's such a great tool. I love it. You know, the 34 tee time that consisted of Molinari along with Koepka and Woods was thrilling right out of the gate, playing on the back nine. All right, a double bogey for Tiger to begin the 2019 PGA Championship. A birdie for Brooks Koepka, who just kept it going. A clean card. Seven birdies, zero bogeys. Just dominating this course. Had a couple of guests on who joined us on Wednesday night, including the Philly Rooster, who has made his bones and cut his teeth as a handicapper in the world of covering the PGA Tour. He released the free winner for us last night. His name? Brooks Koepka. He also said he thought 7-under would be the score to win the 2019 PGA Championship. Brooks Koepka did that today by shooting a 63. He shot a 63 a year ago in St. Louis. Remember, that was played in August. So it was different. It was much warmer, more humidity in the Midwest compared to, you know, what we have seen after a very difficult winter in New York. But 16-under was the score a year ago. I continue to reflect back as to what we saw here with the players. Rory McIlroy a winner. The excitement of late Saturday afternoon. You know, the back nine on Sunday was perhaps as great as any golf tournament that Jacksonville or Pontevedra has ever seen. The only disappointment for me was how low these golfers were going. Maybe they're just that good. I mean, to watch Brooks Koepka today, the man rolled in 121 feet worth of birdie putts. Think about that for a moment. 121 feet, including a 33-footer on his last hole, which was hole number 9. Yeah, I'm watching him set up saying, there's no way he's rolling in a 33-footer. And he did. 121 feet. He went around Bethpage Black today, shooting a 63, and he only had 25 putts. 18 holes, 25 putts. You do the math. Are you kidding me? Absolutely sensational. Off the tee, hit 9 of 14 fairways. That's good. Tough course, tight fairways. We talked about how difficult it would be and how unlike it was if you missed a fairway here where you could recover, where the rough wasn't nearly as severe as perhaps a lot of golf experts expected it would be, or the way it was the last several years in May compared to March. There really isn't a lot of rough in Augusta. Instead, you're dealing with pine straw. Okay? The United States Open, you're always dealing with rough. The British Open, you're always dealing with rough. This year's PGA Championship out at Bethpage, and you're going to go around the black course, you're going to deal with rough. You can't miss fairways. Well, Brooks Koepka missed 5 of them today. He was 14 of 18 in greens and regulations. He was 4 of 4 when it came to scrambling. This was truly one of the great rounds that I can think of that I have seen, historically speaking, in the world of golf. Certainly in a major, a 63. Ties a record at Bethpage, or actually breaks the record in a major at Bethpage and ties the overall record for a 63 during PGA Championships. As I said a moment ago, Koepka was able to do that back in a year ago in St. Louis, less than a year ago, because he did it in August, of course, this event being played right now. Just a great day. Really enjoyed it. Tiger struggled, but it wasn't with his driver. Tiger drove the ball off the tee well enough today to contend. His problem, putting. He three-putted 3 times today. He three-putted twice all 4 rounds during Augusta. And the hiccups for him were right out of the gate. Number 10, number 17, of course, playing the back nine first. Tiger actually, during his last 10 holes where he was beginning to make a comeback, he had birdie putts 9 of his last 10 holes. He just couldn't get the ball to roll today. Once again, missed either 3 or 4 5 to 6 foot putts. Classic gimmies for Tiger Woods over the years. The one thing we always knew about Tiger, he was guaranteed to make those putts when he was making that incredible run when he had the 14 majors. He just added his 15th, as we know, a month ago. Didn't work today for Tiger Woods. Is the tournament over for him? Probably not. He's going to have to go low tomorrow, get the afternoon tee time to do it. I figure he's got to shoot a 67, 68 tomorrow and then hope that Brooks Koepka struggles a little bit. But Koepka's gone 31 consecutive holes now without a bogey during the PGA Championship. Haven't had a repeat winner since Woods in 06, 07. That's why some would go against Koepka, play the odds. A lot of first-time winners, a lot of first-time major winners as of late. Of course, the Americans have also dominated the PGA Championship, winning 7 times since 2007. All right, we are jam-packed tonight. We are absolutely loaded. What a night, what a day, what a night. Any day that the former Gator Mike Gillisley works out with the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know it's a great day in this city.
This is one of those fun days.
It really is. My only issue is, I just looked it up, Gillisley has caught 17 balls in the NFL since he came into the league in 2013. That wouldn't be defined as the third down back that I was thinking of. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on the show. We got a lot of football to dive into later in the night. Keep you updated on what's going on tonight. Basketball-wise, game 2 in Oakland. Golden State up 1-0 there. That's at 9 o'clock. And the Bruins will try to wrap things up tonight against Carolina. They'll drop the puck coming up at 8. The Bruins up 3-0 in the best of 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals. So, basketball, NHL, keep you updated on what's happening. Certainly our major conversation piece tonight is on the PGA Championship. David Lamb knows a ton when it comes to the sport of golf. And he joins Rick Ballew next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
That's just a good, feel-good type of Thursday. It really is. I mean, anytime the Boston Bruins have an opportunity to clinch and go after the Lord's Stanley Cup, gotta love it. I'm worried, though, about the officiating. I mean, what are we going to do about all these problems?
That was just brutal last night. As just a fan watching that, I mean, my goodness, there's nothing you can possibly do about that. That's got to be fixed in a situation like that, right?
You know, human error is one thing, but technology is not working. What's it in place for if it's not working? Now, I guess it did work for the Kentucky Derby, but it's not working in these other sports, and I'm really mystified by it. Believe me, I could care less about San Jose, St. Louis. That means nothing to me. But I'm talking about the integrity of the great game. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because I understand that hockey, okay, hockey fan, and actually, you know, the Icemen draw. They draw 6,500, 7,000 there. There are a lot of hockey fans here in Jacksonville. Now, when I used to do the games with Joe Zidlow, Bruce Cassidy was the head coach. He is now the head coach of the Boston Bruins, who are playing in this game tonight against Carolina. There is a good hockey fan base in town. But I think any sports fan in general, it doesn't matter what the sport is, when you see the outcome being affected because they cannot get the call right, that really rips apart the game that we love. And in this particular situation, we have gone from football to basketball to hockey to horse racing back to hockey. When's it going to end? The only thing I can't think of where it's really been affected as of late is baseball. And that same city in St. Louis, don't mention the name Don Denkinger there. Okay? Remember when Joaquin Andujar had that meltdown? Memory serves me correct. Was that World Series 1985, the Battle of Missouri between Kansas City and St. Louis? The obvious play at first base where Joaquin Andujar, I think he took the ball. Who was playing first base then for the St. Louis Cardinals? Might have been Keith Hernandez before he went to the Mets. Or he may have already been gone. It may have been Leon Durham. The Baby Bull had a nice career as well in Chicago. But Don Denkinger, okay, loathed in St. Louis. Made the wrong call. We saw it there. They didn't have the technology. So we see it last night in hockey, a week after we saw it in horse racing, after we saw it during the Final Four in basketball, in the NFC Championship game, in football. Umpires, referees, officials, stewards, they're getting it wrong. And you can't review a call like this last night with a hand pass? All four missed it. Two refs, two linesmen. Unbelievable. Hopefully we don't get to any controversy in the world of golf. Let's hope that that doesn't come into play. Let's bring in our good friend David Lamb. You can read Dave by going to 1010XL.com. Dave, I know you're a golf historian. Can you think of anything that just off the top of your head where the wrong call was made that affected the outcome of a major golfing event?
I can't think of where the wrong call was made. I can think of some calls that maybe weren't made. And, of course, you remember what 2 years ago or 3 years ago at the U.S. Open when Dustin Johnson didn't know for seven holes.
Right.
Whether or not he was going to be assessed a penalty.
Right.
And he was, by the way. Now, to golf's credit, they pretty much gotten rid of all that.
Yep.
They pretty much eliminated the golf nut who just keeps calling and saying, I saw it in front and I saw this.
Yeah.
They pretty much taken that all out of off the books now. So, but that the Dustin Johnson thing was one of the few that.
Yeah.
Was really so poorly handled
mm-hmm.
that it was ridiculous.
Well, what a round today for Brooks Koepka. And I was up early and I streamed it online and, you know, wasted no time on his very first hole. But, you know, a tremendous card. Seven birdies for him, David. Zero bogeys. He posts a 7-under 63.
You know, with all the talk about could he win another major, you know, the defending champion, we know he's just won back-to-back U.S. Open. You know, I think a lot of people expected Brooks Koepka to go out and, you know, and throw up a 72 or something, kind of, you know, just dodge a script. For him to go out 63, which, by the way, only ties the lowest score ever in major championship competition. Now, it's been done numerous times, but nobody's ever shot better than 63. Mm-hmm. And on a course that they talked about being a bear, interestingly enough, and the day scores reveal how difficult Bethpage Black is because there weren't that many people under par. But Justin Rose, earlier in the week, I heard him on live from the PGA or the Golf Channel. Somebody asked him about the scores and how difficult it was. And he said, well, you know, I think there's a 64 out there.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think anybody will be able to string a bunch of, you know, really good rounds together. 64, come back with 71, come back with 70. But I thought he was being, quite the prophet to see that with this course, a little wet, and even though it's playing long, and even though it truly favors a small number of the players, that, you know, you get to 64. We often talk about courses, blah, blah, blah. And I think it's overblown a little bit. But this is one, it's a monster course lengthwise. Now you add the dampness where the ball's not rolling, and it truly does favor the bombers. I mean, you don't You don't hit three woods off the tee or two irons. All of them have got that driver in their hand most of the day, and they're trying to thump it as hard as they can. And so it does favor that guy that's just moving out there well into the 300, and keep it in the fairway. And one of those thumpers will do that this week, and it may be Brooks Koepka.
David Lamb's our guest, joining us here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM with Rick Ballew. Brooks Koepka is leading the PGA Championship, a 63 today, has a one-stroke lead over Danny Lee, who did post that 64. A lot has been written, a lot has been said about Koepka. And, David, you and I talked about him when we did the third and final round this year of the Players, and when you joined me after the Masters, where he was tied for second when it was all said and done. But who does he remind you of anyone? And I'm not talking about the body type, because he's a big physical kid. But does he remind you of anyone as far as his mentality, the way he handles the press, and the way that he looks and the way that he acts while he's out on the golf course?
I really think he's kind of unique, Rick. I don't know. And I'm getting tired of talking about how he's overlooked or underrated. That story, you know, the tread on those tires has gotten small. And you know what I figured out, man? It's just this week, in watching all the build-up to the PGA, the truth of the matter is there are a bunch of the great players who are often overlooked and not thought about. You know, DJ, the Dustin Johnson, will go into a lot of tournaments and his name will never be mentioned. Dustin Rose is number one in the world, hardly got mentioned. The reason for that is because, right or wrong, whatever you think of it, it's your business, all of the emphasis before every one of these tournaments is on Tiger Woods or Rory McIlroy or Phil Mickelson.
Right.
They get all of the hype. Now, that doesn't mean that somebody will say, well, you know, I think Dustin Johnson might win. But you're not seeing him constantly being interviewed and stories about him. And that's true of a lot of these top players. How much do you hear about Francesco Molinari, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's had a great run here in the last 6 to 9 months. You just don't hear it very much because three guys suck up all the air.
Right.
And so it's not just Koepka being not given his due. It's most of them aren't given their due because Tiger, Phil, and Rory suck up all the air.
We got a couple of minutes left, Dave. Give us your overall thought on Tiger Woods, who, you know, appeared to be good enough to contend off the tee. Obviously, his major problem today was putting.
Yeah, and plus two double bogeys. You know, here's my theory on the great on tour caliber players. When they make double bogey, more often than not, it's because they've made a dumb decision, not because of bad shots. They hit a bad shot, and they've got almost no chance to get to the green. They should chip it out, knock it over the green, maybe make a par, but most likely settle for two putts and bogey. But they try this impossible shot, and it bangs around and goes in the creek, and the next thing you know, they make double bogey. So when I see that he is consistently now making those double bogeys like he never used to, I just think he's not thinking as smartly, as intelligently as he should. Well, he needs to clean that up.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does, then I think he's got a chance, you know. There'll be a lot of people to get back in there. I expect Koepka tomorrow to shoot 70, 71, you know, and that'll bring a lot of people right back into it. Danny Lee will shoot 74, you know, and so it'll be a shootout for the weekend, and then somebody, maybe Koepka, will throw up a 66 and pull back in front and see if he can hold it off, everybody else off. But I think that's what Tiger's problem is. Clearly, he needs to putt better from inside 10 feet. You're absolutely right about that. But it's these double bogeys. The same thing with Jordan Spieth. You go back and look at his track record. He's always making a double bogey, even a triple bogey every now and then, and you're going, think better. Be smarter out there than you're being.
Hey, David, we'll talk with you tomorrow night on a Friday after the second round. Get ready for the weekend. Thanks as always.
All right, tomorrow the picture will be pretty clear, and we'll know exactly what we're looking forward to the weekend. And it should be a great PGA Championship.
Yep, no doubt about it. David Lamb, make sure you read him. Go to 1010XL.com. David will be with us again tomorrow night at 7:20. We'll talk about the second round coverage and get ready for moving day on Saturday. There he goes, David Lamb. All right, we got much more to get into. We're going to be with you tonight until 9 o'clock. And LaCorey told us a night ago that Tiger didn't even go out and practice on Wednesday. He basically took the day to rest. And it's so easy to second guess. I mean, that's what we do, particularly in the world of armchair quarterbacking. We always second guess, but Tiger's strategy was not to play in any events after the Masters. Okay? He took the 5 weeks off. He did not participate on the PGA Tour. And we know that after the back fusion, his body is different. He can't go through the wear and tear. He can't practice the way that he once did. We heard him say, even after winning at Augusta, that bending over to pick the ball out of the hole, putting, has taken a toll on his back. You know, it's easy to sit here and say he didn't practice enough. He didn't train enough for this event. But the putts didn't roll today for Tiger Woods. He had 31 overall, and he is plus two right now. A lot of golfers at minus two, minus one, well, quite a few golfers, I should say. Matter of fact, I'm going to give you a full leaderboard update here coming up momentarily, brought to you by our good friends over at Stream Song. So we have that coming up in just a couple of minutes. Tonight's show is brought to you by Key Buick and Key GMC. They have phenomenal deals that are available for you right now. It is also Military Appreciation Month, the month of May. The lifetime powertrain warranty continues if you get a brand new Buick or GMC from Key. And what about the 2018 GMC Sierra 1500 truck, the 2018 edition? You could save $15,500 on all all trucks that are available right now. Just visit them at Key. That's more than 28% off. Right there in Tinseltown or across the street from it, it's Gate and Southside Boulevard. I'm talking about Key Buick and Key GMC.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, first round of the PGA Championship is over. Brooks Koepka, he has been over with his round since about, 1:45 this afternoon? Went out at 8:34 this morning. Koepka, Molinari, and Woods. And started on the back nine today. Just a phenomenal round for Brooks Koepka. A birdie on 10, a birdie on 14, a birdie on 18. So he goes out at 3 under par, and then he proceeds to birdie 1, 3, 5, and 9. Comes in with a 31. Out with a 32, in with a 31, a 63, 7 birdies, 0 bogeys today for Brooks Koepka. Well, I'm going to talk about a little bit later on in the program. We are going to take you through a full leaderboard right now. But, I mean, it's really a fascinating story if you consider that Brooks Koepka has won five events on the PGA Tour, three of which are majors. He's won three majors and two regular events on the PGA Tour. And he's won three out of the last seven majors. Many believe he'll win this year. That'll be four out of the last eight won by Brooks Koepka as far as the majors. All right, let's take a look at the leaderboard. It is brought to you by Stream Song and their Finley Cup Golf Tournament coming up June 14th through 16th. It's Father's Day weekend, and it's the Family Cup Tournament. Families of all varieties are welcome to participate. They'll compete on two of Stream Song's nationally ranked courses for the coveted Stream Song Family Cup. They want to recognize families come in all shapes and sizes, but do they share one priceless thing in common? That's spending time together with your family and getting after the Stream Song Family Cup. Let's go to StreamSongResort.com. Welcome reception, putting competition, floating green target competition, two rounds of golf, two nights accommodations in the Stream Songs Lakeside Lodge, which is just out of this world. Been there three different times for weekends, and it is worth the trip. Just talking about Brooks Koepka, 7-under, a 63 today, a clean card. Danny Lee, a stroke out, minus 6. Tommy Fleetwood with a 67 today, played the backside first. Mike Lorenzo Vera with him, actually one stroke out at minus 2. Chez Rive at minus 2, so 68s today for Rive and Lukas. Sung Lang with a 68, and Pat Perez with a 68. Ricky Fowler still looking for his first ever major. A 69 today for Ricky Fowler. He is 1-under par, of course, on this par 70 at Bethpage Black. Matt Wallace, Patrick Cantlay, Dustin Johnson, and Jordan Spieth all at minus 1. Phil Mickelson, one of the last golfers to come off the course today, he is at minus 1 as well. Jason Day, 1-under par. Siwoo Kim, who of course won a Players Championship right here, is at 1-under. So those are your golfers right there, 16 of which who are in red figures as we head for Friday's tee times. Even to par right now. A lot of Americans. Remember, the United States of America, they've had a lot of success at the PGA Championship as of late. I think they've won it 7 times since 2007. A lot of first-time major winners as well have been represented from the United States. Those at even par, Sam Burns, Patton Kazir, Jason Karen, Max Homa, David Lipsky, all even to par. Some other notables, Jimmy Walker, even par. Graham McDowell, even par. Lewis Oosthuizen is even par. Justin Rose, even par. Hideki Matsuyama, even par. The former Seminole Daniel Berger, even par. Paul Casey, even par. Tony Finau, even par. Former Gator Billy Horschel, even par. Gary Woodland, my long shot to win this year's tournament, even par. Keegan Bradley's even. John Rahm, Matt Kuchar, all even par right now. To plus one, some notables include Adam Scott, Tyler Hatton, J.B. Holmes, former Masters champion Danny Willett, another former Masters champion Zach Johnson. Plus two, Bo Hostler, J.J. Spahn, Scott Piercy. Out of JU, Russell Knox is plus two, shooting a 72 today. CH3, that's Charles Howell III, a plus 272. Francesco Molinari, who of course played in that pairing today with Tiger and with your overall leader, Brooks Koepka, he shot a plus two. Tiger Woods, plus two today. It was nasty for Tiger early. He had a double bogey on 10, playing the backside first, a birdie on 15, then a double bogey on the par 3, 17th hole, par 18. So Tiger Woods went out by shooting a 38, 3 over par. Then he got things rolling. Birdies on 1 and 2, an eagle on 4. Now, during all of this, Woods continued to have 9 birdie putts on his final 10 holes. However, he would bogey 5, 7, and 8, sandwiched around pars on 6 and 9. So he comes in with the 34. Overall, a 72 today for Tiger Woods. You know, hit 10 of 14 fairways, hit 12 of 18 greens. He just had trouble putting. This morning, 31 putts, didn't necessarily scramble all that well. Only 2 of 5 scrambling today was Tiger Woods. Missed 3 5 footers. And again, the two that we talked about, the two double bogeys, that'll erase his eagle and those other birdies. Ends up with a plus 2. 72. All right, some other notables for you. At plus 2, Ian Poulter, Bryson DeChambeau, Kevin Na, Rory McIlroy, a plus 272 today. Corey Connors, a winner on tour 5 weeks ago, plus 2. Charlie Hoffman to plus 3 now. Alex Noren, plus 3. Adam Long, plus 3. Brandon Grace, plus three. Ryan Moore, plus three. Kevin Tway, plus three. Jim Furyk. Boy, after his performance here at the Players in March, today Jim Furyk with a plus 373. All right, the plus fours, let's see, Brandt Snedeker, a 74 today. Henrik Stenson, a 74, plus four today. Sergio Garcia and Pat Reed, both with 74s. And I think that's Martin Keimer, who, of course, has won here at the Players with a plus four. And I think that'll do it as far as the 99 golfers. A couple of other notables today. Lee Westwood, plus 575. Rich Beam, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, golf book that I've ever read, was called Bud, Sweat, and Tees, written about Rich Beam and his former caddy, the now late Steve Duplantis. It was written before he won the PGA Championship, and I advise that to all of you golf fans out there listening, you read that book. You'll love it. I mean, sleeping in cars, just trying to become relevant, a plus 575 today for Beam. Plus 575 today for John Daly and Patty Harrington. Jason Duffner as well, plus 676. Obviously, these golfers won't be around for the weekend. Bubba Watson, a plus 676. Johnny Vegas, a 76 today. And I'm just looking if there's some any other notables. Kevin Kisner, a plus 7. And that'll about do it. Let's see, an 81 today for Brian Gay. He withdrew. So there you go. Your leaderboard brought to you by Stream Song Resort. You folks should take that in consideration for that Father's Day Cup. Coveted. Getting out there with the family and playing. Ladies, women, absolutely. Phenomenal. Three golf courses to choose from. Red, blue, and black. Stream Song is just incredible. I think they have three or four restaurants, including a rooftop bar. The lodging is, they've got some gators there. I mean, these things are 12, 14, 15 footers. And from where you hang out, in your hotel room, it overlooks these ponds and lakes, I really should say. But just enormous wildlife. Also, I've never done the bass fishing there. From what I understand, it's like fishing out of a barrel, which is really the way that I'd enjoy fishing. Huge bass, sporting clays, again, spa, pool, I mean, whatever you want. That rooftop bar is a great place to have a late night smoke, too. Nice fat cigar after a steak. I'm telling you, I'm going again this summer. I've been three times. I've been with family. I've been with a girlfriend and my brother and his wife, and I've been with just buddies, just cronies. It's good either way. It's a great getaway for you and the friends. It's also a great place to bring your wife or girlfriend. So you can't go wrong at Stream Song Resort. Check them out today. Who brought those donuts in, LeVay? Is that you?
Definitely wasn't me. I'm trying to cut back on the sweets here. That's not me.
You know, donuts, people think you can only eat donuts during the morning. That's wrong. Donuts are good.
That's a big fib right there.
Yeah, 24 hours a day. But here's my problem. I have no willpower.
Well, me neither.
You bring in donuts, okay, especially that brand of donuts, which are from my neck of the woods. Like, you get out of Miami, every corner you got a strip club, right? You go to Boston, every corner you got a Dunkin' Donuts. That's just the way it is up there. I mean, that's just killing me, whoever brought them in today.
I would take a bite out of it, but I don't think I like whatever's in it. Some type of weird, creamy filling.
I don't care what it is. I bet it's good. I bet it's about 9,000 calories and it's good.
Guaranteed. At least.
It's the biggest problem that I have. I have the world's worst willpower. I always say, if it's not around, I won't eat it. But if it is around, maybe it's an addiction. I'm not sure. But when it's not around, I don't find myself craving it. Now, it doesn't matter what the sweet is. If it's gone and it's not in sight, it's typically not in mind.
That's the same exact thing for me, because I could go, you know, to the store, eat healthy, get healthy stuff, and don't buy any sweets. And then the next thing you know, when your roommate offers you a big thing of cake and ice cream, and it all goes south from there.
But I weigh 75 pounds more than you.
Yeah, I guess there's a difference there.
But right.
Still, though, same willpower logic.
I am an inch taller. This new kid for the Sox that is brought up, Chavis is crushing the baseball. He's listed at 5'10", 220. And I'm like, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with being listed at 5'10", 220? You can be compact if that's your height and weight. You can be put together if that's your height and weight. I remember talking to someone when I was getting ready to, when I lost 30 pounds in like 30 days, and I described, yeah, 5'10", 220. She goes, oh, without, this is on the phone. She's like, so you're obese then? I'm like, oh, okay. Well,
I just want to hear your response to that.
Yeah. I was like, what do you look like, lady?
I'd have probably hung up.
She's like, so you're obese then? I'm like, Yeah. No, I'm like kind of big, man. You should see like my shoulders and my legs and all that. Now, it says right here, if you're 5'10", you're supposed to weigh like 150 pounds. If you weigh 220, you're obese. You're 70 pounds overweight. I'm like, lady, there's no chance in hell that I'm losing 70 pounds. 7 pounds, maybe. 70 pounds ain't going to happen. All right, second hour's coming up. Much more on the PGA Championship. A little bit of football news that I want to get into, though. The Patrick Peterson situation. The Jaguars today bringing in Mike Gillisley. I'm still looking for that third down back. And disappointed by the media today. Seriously, the Ric Flair story. That's coming up on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, tonight's show brought to you by Key. Great weekend over at Key, where May is Military Appreciation Month. They have got some phenomenal deals on Buicks as well as GMCs. So make sure you go by and visit them. Right across the street from Tinseltown, they're on Southside and Gate. It's where I bought my vehicle. It's where I bought a vehicle for my daughter. And, you know, the lifetime powertrain warranty continues. You buy a brand new vehicle from Key, whether it's a Buick or a GMC, you get a lifetime powertrain warranty. And I drive around town like you do, and I see the traffic stuck. And you always wonder, what is it going to be? It's one of a couple of things. Could be an accident. You hope that's not the case. You don't want anyone out there getting injured. If so, visit my friends at truckcrashlaw.com. But you don't want to see anyone get injured. And that comes into play more and more now because people are driving while they look at their cell phones. I mean, it's killing people. Number two, the traffic is stuck because, well, there happens to be a lot of construction going on in North Florida. I know you get upset with the construction, but they're trying to improve our lives, trying to make the roadways better. And you're actually pretty lucky. Trust me. I spent the first 18 years of my life in Boston. Do you know what the roads are like when you get winter and you get snow and you get salt? Do you have any idea what it does to the roads? I spent 7 years in Chicago. Enormous potholes. I know it gets warm around here. That affects it a little bit. The third way that you see the traffic getting jammed is because cars are overheated, cars are broken down. So a Key, you get a lifetime powertrain warranty. Something happens to your vehicle, you buy a brand new GMC, brand new Buick, you get a lifetime powertrain warranty. That is enormous. And they got great deals on Buicks right now. Envisions, Encores. Just go ahead and visit them. Enclaves, right there on Southside and Gate, right across the street from Tinseltown. All right, you know, today's been a very interesting one. I went to bed a little miffed last night because the referees blew it in the San Jose-St. Louis game. I woke up early today. I mean, 8:30 for me is very early. I'm not going to lie. I mean,
you're up there with the Roosters.
Usually at 8:30, I got a blonde in one arm and a brunette in the other. Because that means I'm in my own sleep coma. And I'm REMing. I'm up today because I'm watching the golf. And, you know, I'm pulling for Tiger. I'm a Tiger guy. Make no bones about it. I'm a front runner. I'm pulling for Tiger. You know, I like Brooks Koepka. He's a Florida State kid. Why wouldn't I like him? But I'm watching everything, and I'm going through my day, and I'm watching the golf, and I'm, you know, checking out other stories in the world of sports. And then all of a sudden, bam, it hits. The Ric Flair story. And I become so embarrassed with the media, who, in my opinion, and tell me if you got the same impression today that I got. But I swear the media was killing Ric Flair. They had him on his deathbed. And it became a situation where it appeared that the media and those deep in this wanted so desperately to be the first one to say it. We've seen it before. I remember the Tom Petty story was brutal. If you remember the day that Tom Petty died, to the point where his daughter took to social media and told everyone to basically calm the hell down. Now, I guess you can make the case that the media was right. But am I reading this wrong? Was it me not getting enough sleep? Was it because I got out of the rack too early this morning and I'm not the same person? But, I mean, this really started as a medical emergency where it's very serious that he's gravely ill to all of a sudden his wife saying he's going to make a full recovery. And I understand the way that it is. The media wants to break a story. The media wants to be first. Guys and gals out there get paid for that, to be the newsbreaker. But killing someone is just out of this world. It's wrong. And I was really embarrassed by that today. I'm aware of what happened with Ric Flair back in 2017. They said the same thing about him there, and he was in critical condition. He was in a medically induced coma for over a week. And it looked like it was about over for Ric Flair. At least that's what the media was reporting. And maybe they look back at that story a year and a half to 2 years ago and figure, well, here we go. Here's another health-related issue for a 70-year-old man. And just think of the abuse that this guy has taken over the years. The pounding. I mean, this is a guy who, like Wilt Chamberlain, maintains he slept with over 10,000 women. Drugs, alcohol. I mean, he's been flirting with disaster, you know, since his late teens. And if there's one guy who loves the sport and is identified with this sport, it's Ric Flair. I mean, I think others have done it because it's their paycheck and it's all they know how to do. But I always sense Ric Flair as a guy, and obviously his daughter's in the WWE now. I kind of sense him sitting home on the couch, still watching it every week, still YouTubing, going back and being involved with it. I mean, he was one of the greatest champs, one of the greatest wrestlers we've ever seen. He was also one of the greatest salesmen we've ever seen, both in the ring and outside of the ring. Did anyone sell a match the way that Ric Flair did? Even in matches where you knew he was going to win, man, did he take the punishment. Man, was he able to master the other guy that he was taking on, his moves, sell him to the audience and take the punishment. And, of course, you probably remember him as a bleeder. Always seemed to be bleeding in these big events. I met him a few times. He was on the sideline, I'm guessing, what, 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago? Right here in Jacksonville during a Jaguars game. Ric Flair was here. I don't know why. This bothered me today. You know, I'm never one that likes to pile on to people who do something similar to what I do. But when you're talking about someone's life, I think it's just cruel. And that's the way that I read this story today, is that people are really doing more than just reporting the story. It was as if they had him on the verge of taking his final breath. And I think that's really sad. But anyway, there are a lot of cruel people out there. And this would be one example. The very latest, his wife is now saying that he is expected to make a full recovery. He's 70 years of age, so we'll see what ends up happening here with Ric Flair. All right, we got much more to get into tonight. A couple of football-related issues. I'll put them in during news and notes. If you haven't heard, the Jaguars brought in a back today for a look-see. Tell you what that's all about. A couple of other football nuggets that did take place. A little bit in baseball I want to get into as well. Also, two games on tap tonight. Boston and Carolina, they have just barely dropped the puck seconds ago. It is in Carolina. It's game four. Boston up 3-0 in that best of seven. Coming up tonight at 9 o'clock as well in Oakland, Portland and Golden State will play. Golden State favored by 7. Your total's 220. They're up 1-0 in the best of that particular series. How about last night's game? I thought Toronto was going to win that going away. It looked that way, in my opinion, at halftime. It looked that way moving through the third quarter. And then you get to the final, you know, the final quarter, the fourth quarter, and the Bucks virtually double up Toronto. I think the final scoring in that fourth quarter last night was 32-17. And we talked about it during Wednesday night's show. Milwaukee started real slow, losing game one to Boston in the semifinals, and then they didn't play all that well early in game two. And if I remember correctly, that was a close game that came down to a couple of points, and the Bucks did what they had to advance, and of course they won four straight. They got better as the series moved along. And I wasn't giving this my undivided attention last night. I had it on, but I am a hockey guy. I'm not going to lie to you. If you match hockey with the NBA, I'm taking the NHL. I'm a puck head. That's the way I was born. That's the way I was raised, even during the great Larry Bird era in Boston. I'm a hockey guy first. But 32-17 in the fourth quarter? Puzzling. It happened one night ago. All right, we got much more to do. Let's get to Truth Teller News and Notes. We do that each and every night. It is brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, another look coming up in just a couple of minutes. PGA Championship. You've been out and haven't had an opportunity to see what's going on. We'll go through that coming up in just a few moments. But first things first, let's get the news and notes, Truth Teller style. Brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com. Right here in Jacksonville, they're the only law firm statewide where all they do is this. If someone has been injured on the road by a tractor trailer, a truck, an RV, a bus, anything like that, and it happened out on the road, and it has affected their life, whether it's been a serious injury, even if it was fatal, make sure they know the firm, TruckCrashLaw.com. Wonderful people there for you. Difficult time. You know, if it's someone at work and they're missing time, send you with them, what have you, let them know that there are people out there like this. TruckCrashLaw.com. That is the only law firm of its kind that way here in the state of Florida. They're based in Jacksonville. Right, this breaking news a couple of minutes ago, Judy Batista of NFL Media is reporting now that the competition committee may modify the rule without needing a vote from the owners. okay? It would consider allowing coaches to challenge offensive or defensive pass interference throughout the game, including the final 2 minutes of each half. That's according to Batista. Remember, the new rule that is under a one-year experiment, the final 2 minutes of half or going in the half, going in the end of the game, that has to come from the officials or upstairs. So the article goes on to say that leaving the review decision for the offensive and defensive pass interference in the hands of the head coaches, regardless of when it occurs, would lead to greater consistency in what is being reviewed. So this just in moments ago, in any type of tinkering and or tweaking that the NFL can do to make this rule get even better, we're all for it. Because I began the show tonight, even during the day in which Brooks Koepka began with a 63 at the PGA Championship, talking about the farce that occurred last night in Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals in the Stanley Cup. Okay, or on, I should say, in the National Hockey League. They'll play for the Stanley Cup once they get through the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. But another outcome of a major, major game effect. Too much of this. No doubt about it. All right, let's get to some football. For starters, Mike Gillisley was brought in today by the Jaguars for a look. He's now 28, the former Gator. Been around a little bit. Miami, New England, New Orleans last year. 4 games, 16 carries, 43 yards. I always like Gillisley a little bit. What I don't like are his numbers as a receiver out of the backfield. 1 ball last year, 9 yards, 17 balls in his career, 103 yards. Going back to 2013. That's not enough. Still think they need a third down back. Brought him in today, looked at him, did not sign him. Doesn't mean they can't or they won't, but as of right now at 8:21, to my knowledge, the Jaguars have not signed Mike Gillisley. Remember, it all begins on Tuesday. Tuesday, OTAs on the field with media coverage. Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week. So I'm very excited about that. I hope you are as well. An opportunity to watch what's going on and to get a chance to talk with some players, some interviews with some players. So that's going to be over the next few weeks. It begins Tuesday, Thursday, Friday next week. SpotTrack's a very good website. You know, these numbers are a little bit confusing when you look at contracts, because no matter which website you use, it seems like the money is always a little bit different. And, you know, I think I know a little bit about money. I know what I make and I know what I spend. But I don't have any idea about salary cap type money. Guarantees, dead money, prorated bonuses, how you fit money. Actually, I get that. I'm talking about how to fit guys into the cap. That is an issue for me. I mean, around here, we've talked a lot about Yannick Ngakoue. We've talked a lot here about Telvin Smith and, you know, recouping some funds if he doesn't play. And obviously, the $44.5 million dead money from last year to this year because of names like Bortles, Gibson, Jackson. It's created that. Well, today, SpotTrack listed 10 potential NFL trade or release candidates, headed up by Gerald McCoy in Tampa Bay. Totally get that. $13 million. It's all over the place in Tampa. Bruce Arians showed up, says he's not the player he once was. McCoy hasn't shown up. You know, there's talk that maybe he'd be released. There's talk that he could maybe be traded to Cleveland. You know, some other names out there. Beasley. Heard about that in Atlanta. The Rudolph situation. As a tight end right now in Minnesota. McCoy. You know, they got all of a sudden 4 backs in Buffalo, including T.J. Yeldon. Shady McCoy making a lot of money. Does he still have it? Is he still a guy with the burst? A great two-way guy who can catch and run. Is he worth the amount of money they're paying? Then you get to number 5, Jalen Ramsey. I'm like, again. I mean, all you gotta do is pick up the phone and call a local guy. Jaguars aren't releasing. Can you imagine if the Jaguars released they're not releasing Jalen Ramsey. They're not trading Jalen Ramsey. They weren't going to trade Jalen Ramsey during the draft, even though media outlets nationally kept reporting on it. We told you all, it's not going to happen. Well, you think they're going to trade him now on the 16th day of May? What do you think it's like the New York Jets run type of organization? And I'm looking at these names, and they all reek of one thing. Are there better years behind them? I still think McCoy's a phenomenal player, but that's Bruce Arians' commentary, not mine. Arians brought up that his best days are behind him, or he didn't have the burst he once had. I just gave you my opinion on Shady McCoy. I still think Rudolph's got phenomenal ability as a tight end. But how do you throw Jalen Ramsey into that mix? You just threw him in the middle of it all. And then you got Joseph with the Raiders, Treadwell in Minnesota, Lee in New York. And I actually want to say that he was traded late last night, earlier today. That was the first move that Adam Gase made, was trading away his inside linebacker, Lee. So that move already has taken place. So credit SpotTrack. They were right with that one. But the situation with Jalen Ramsey is baffling. All right, a report now that the 49ers will not be on Hard Knocks. That leaves us with four teams. Well, they and I went through it. I wanted the Raiders. Did you pick the Raiders as well?
Yeah, it's got to be the Raiders. I think that's a no-brainer.
What about the Redskins?
I mean, it'd be interesting, but I feel like everyone wants to see the Raiders, especially with the AB stuff, and obviously you got Mayock in there, Gruden. That's showtime right there.
Yeah, four teams remain. Oakland, couple of East Coast teams. That's D.C. and the New York Giants, which would be interesting. Does Dave Gettleman insert foot in mouth? And the whole situation about the, you know, drafting of Daniel Jones and whether or not, you know, Eli, we still imagine, is the starting quarterback this year. And then, of course, the situation that is going on quarterback-wise with Dwayne Haskins in D.C. The Lions appear to really be the fourth team. I mean, honestly, I don't even know if I'd watch Inside or Hard Knocks if it was on the Lions. I can't think of a situation that would be more boring. When it's all said and done. Patrick Peterson gets tabbed today. Six games. PEDs. Think it's expensive? Going to cost him $3.89 million. For those who don't know, unless you have certain bonuses that are written in, roster bonuses in March, whatever, you're paid on 17 weeks, 16 games. That is the way the NFL contract works. He is losing $3.89 million. $1 million for a positive test today. PEDs in, unfortunately, there for Patrick Peterson. That stings. Tate Martell today, Miami's quarterback. A little bit of a, I read it as a little bit feel sorry for me type of story. Okay? You've been there behind J.T. Barrett, he had been there behind Dwayne Haskins, waiting his turn patiently. Urban Meyer steps down, and then all hell breaks loose. Apparently, he was told to leave. And then Justin Fields transfers from Georgia to Ohio State. So that's why he entered the transfer portal. That is why he is playing now at the University of Miami. The way you look at it is any way that you want to. But I think it's fair for anyone to say kids are scared of competition. And if kids have an opportunity to play somewhere else, take advantage of it. And in my opinion, Tate Martell is absolutely part of that equation. Didn't want to have to battle for it at Ohio State. Now the release story is that, in fact, he was told to leave the Buckeyes. Don't know. Hey, Chris Steele, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. I'm sure you're aware the five-star from Florida is leaving and now going to Oregon. They're putting together a phenomenal team out there at Oregon. They're one of, I think, I had a list the other day. And I'm looking at true contenders. And, You know, is Oregon a true contender? Yeah. Or are they, you know, in the Virginia Tech, Wisconsin, Michigan State? You feel me here? I mean, teams that every once in a while put together something great can maybe get it to a to a Rose Bowl or maybe even a national championship game. But, you know, are they going to win a national championship? In most cases, no. That's the way that I've always looked at Oregon when it's all said and done. But Mario Cristobal now, he's one of the few teams in all of college football that has his entire offensive line returning. And to me, that is enormous, all right? If you look at college football powers, Oregon and Auburn are the only two, and Michigan State. Auburn, Oregon, and Michigan State are the three powers in the Power Five conferences who return their entire offensive line. And to me, that is huge. Obviously, quarterback is the most important. Well, Oregon returns their quarterback. All right, Michigan State and Auburn just lost it. Actually, yeah, Michigan State and Auburn. Michigan State returns their quarterback. I was thinking of Penn State. So keep an eye on Oregon. I mean, I'm looking at other teams who return their offensive linemen. Boise State. Ooh. Yuck. Play here on opening day. That's not any good. Ball State, Hawaii, Iowa State, Southern Miss, Texas State, Western Kentucky, and the University of Louisiana out of both Lafayette and Monroe. To me, that is a huge, huge thing in the world of college football, returning your entire offensive line. Yeah, look at those powerhouses, Oregon, Michigan State, and Auburn, and that could end up being pretty interesting when it's all said and done. All right, final note. Christian Yelich, a couple home runs today in a Milwaukee victory over Philadelphia. Christian Yelich right now hitting .342, 18 bombs, 40 RBIs. On the other side of the field, he was down to .218. He got a hit late in a 1-for-4 effort. Bryce Harper is hitting .221 with 7 home runs and 25 RBIs. .221. Christian Yelich is hitting 121 points higher than Bryce Harper. If you were to poll Major League Baseball fans listening right now, my guess is that 99% of them would choose Bryce Harper over Christian Yelich. My guess is that general managers would be about 50-50. And I'm not saying that Harper can't respond and pick up off of these terrible numbers after a month and a half, because he had a great first week in Philly. But that's going to be a big difference. And I said it. I mean, Mike Trout can do whatever he wants, and he's just going to be rewarded in L.A. I mean, Manny Machado heard it in San Diego when they went back to L.A. and visited the Dodgers. But, I mean, come on. Doesn't matter if he goes 0-for-4 or 4-for-4. He's going to wake up every day. It's going to be 75 degrees in San Diego, and he's going to have a great life. There's no pressure on Mike Trout. There's no pressure on Manny Machado. There is an enormous amount of pressure on Bryce Harper in Philadelphia. I credit the man for choosing that city to play in, but why? Why? Why not take the easy way out? Why not play the role of Machado and never come close to winning? Or Trout to never come close to winning? Never have a meaningful at bat in the month of October? Just cash checks and enjoy nice weather. Bryce Harper now, he's got to be saying to himself, why did I go to Philly? I'm hitting .220. News and notes each and every night brought to you by Truck Crash Law. .com. I mean, think about it that way. Those three men combined is what? About $12 million or $1.2 billion, right? For the three men, right around $400 million apiece, somewhere in that neck of the woods. $1.2 billion for those three. two of them, it doesn't matter what they do in Los Angeles. They show up in the second, leave in the seventh. Philly? You go 0 for 2 in Philly, you're on their you-know-what list. I credit him for choosing that organization. TruckCrashLaw.com, right here in Jacksonville. If someone that you know has been injured or if it was even fatal out on the road and happened in an accident because of a truck, an RV, a bus, anything along those lines, tractor trailer, make sure they're aware of TruckCrashLaw.com. Sensational people there for you. Know the name. It's TruckCrashLaw.com. When I do return, Dan Mullen, foot in mouth again today, and another look at the PGA Championship.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Hi, James Coleman, Denny Thompson. They'll join you at the top of the hour. We'll wrap up our week tomorrow night, 7 to 9. Second round coverage of the Players' Championship. Brooks Koepka, the story today. Danny Lee, one behind with a 64 after Koepka's 63 minus 7. But we really expect Danny Lee to be there come moving day on Saturday. One night this week, and these nights all run together for me, I really defended Dan Mullen. You know, some people are upset. Dan's calling out Georgia, and Dan, you know, made a crack on Florida State. And I said, I love it. Wish we had a little bit more of it. And then people are getting on Dan because recruits are leaving, and, you know, you've had some situations that involve assault and battery with women. And people say, well, you know, Dan needs to sit down with his players. And my opinion was always, these coaches always sit down with their players. You know, sooner or later, you got to blame the kid. He's a young man. And these coaches explain, whether it's Dan Mullen, Willie Taggart, Kirby Smart, Manny Diaz, it doesn't matter. They do it. They explain to them right from wrong. So this demand that Dan Mullen needs to sit down with his players again and you know, explain to them, I believe he's already done it, even though he talked about that recently. However, comments he just made, this is where Dan boils my blood a little bit. He was asked by a member of the media when it came to violence towards women.
I like to take an extremely strong stance on that. I don't see anything about that acceptable in any violence towards women, whether it's a violent act or a wrongful sexual act towards women. I love to take a strong stance to that, but I also like to have all the information before I have to make final decisions.
All right, see, I hear that. And obviously, I think straight to Jeffrey Simmons in Mississippi State. And that was so political. I mean, I thought Jim McElwain was the guy that we questioned what he was saying and the value of truth. Dan Mullen can't make a comment like that, in my opinion, with the background that he has. He just can't. Again, I defended Dan Mullen earlier this week on everything that I just went over again. But we all saw the video on Jeffrey Simmons. And this isn't Florida's problem. This is the reputation of Dan Mullen. You can't say one thing and then allow your actions to show something else. This is a mistake. It's a brutal question. But he better find a way to clean up that answer, because he's going to be asked about it again during SEC media days. And if situations like this continue to pop up at the University of Florida, unless he does something drastic, and what I mean by drastic is kicking a kid off the team, he's always going to be considered a guy who gives the benefit of the doubt to his player and not the battered woman. Now, these recent scenarios I've remained consistent on, as I always have been. Let's gather all the information, and then let's decide what to do. I agree with Dan on that. But I just don't think he can look at anyone and answer that question that way when we're aware of what happened with Jeffrey Simmons. That, to me, is disappointing. So this is the first time that I'm on the disappointing side of Mullen. Not earlier in the week when others were popping off on him for taking shots at Georgia and saying they haven't won a title in 39 years and saying they'll post 41,000, whatever, if they put up 41 in Tallahassee. I don't care about that. That's fine. Well, the Gators owned Tallahassee a year ago. They hadn't won there, and, you know, they'd been 0 for the last five against Florida State. They win a game, then all of a sudden they're trumping their own horn. Good. They should. Then 1.5 decades. Yet they're trumping their horn now. They haven't beaten Georgia in a while. That's fine. That's their rival. I love that. I'd rather have a coach who puts it out there and stands in front of it and then sees if his team will respond and if his fan base will respond. I admire that. But this is not the answer that I'm looking for. And it's a difficult question because of what Mullen did years ago at Mississippi State. Can you say that there's growth with him as a man and a coach in that if he could do it all over again, he wouldn't have allowed Simmons to play in Starkville? I mean, we all change, possibly. I'd listen to that. But I just thought that answer to me was the wrong one. And I had some people earlier today send me some stuff saying that Mullen took it a little bit farther and said, well, if you know me and obviously my background, that hasn't always necessarily been the case. So there was directly some admittance towards that particular scenario. This is what it's all about when your kids get in trouble. You're going to have to address this particular elephant in the room. And you better be very careful with your words because people have long memories. I hope Dan Mullen's able to fix that.
Now, the 2-minute drill delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
At Moe's, our caterings have you covered from head to toe and especially stomach. Order your office event or tailgate catering today online at moescateringfl.com.
All right, it is time for Denny Thompson and James Coleman.
What you getting on to Dan the Man for?
I'm not. I love Dan.
What do you do? What do you do now?
I've been bragging about him all week.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Huh.
That didn't sound
No, he made a mistake by answering the violence towards women. I mean,
you
can't answer the question that way when we all remember Jeffrey Simmons and we saw the video.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tough question.
It goes back to the old you never answer an always and nevers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's – I don't know. It's one of those things where I don't know what it is about coaches. I was just out at the Fletcher Sandalwood game and got a chance to see a bunch of college coaches that I've known for a long time. But I noticed that I guess it's the job. They always speak in certainties. Like it's this is the truth and there is no gray area about it. And so it's interesting to hear coaches speak. Even privately, not even to the media, just privately.
Well, that's why it's called coach speak. Yeah. And you listen, a lot of people have been up on him the last week to 10 days about taking shots at Georgia and taking shots at Florida State and doing things along those lines. And, you know, now that a couple of his kids have been brought up on some allegations here and some charges that involve women, people will say, well, he needs to sit down and address this with his team. And my, you know, response to all this has been, they all do that. Isn't it time to look at the players and say, the players made the mistake? I mean, whether it's Dan Mullen, Willie Taggart, Kirby Smart, or Manny Diaz, all of these coaches tell these kids –
do people really say that, though, Rick? They really say they should have a talk with the team.
Yes. my social media, absolutely. You know, Dale Mellon needs to address this with his team.
Like it's never been thought of before?
You know, does he need to tell his team to look both ways before they cross the road?
Wait, you mean
I mean, that's just so obvious. You don't batter women.
You mean all I had to do was tell them not to do it? They wouldn't have done it?
Right, right. Now, typically, you get on coaches like this when you're not winning.
Yeah.
And when situations like this happen in a program and they're not winning, that often results in the end of the road for a coach. We typically, and I say we as a group, will overlook and side with the program and the coach if they are winning.
Every level. High school, college, pro.
No doubt about it. But
probably even Pop Warner if you look hard enough.
I just think he's a smart guy. I think he should be – I guess the point I'm trying to make, he should have been better prepared for that question.
Yeah. Yeah. You could also make the argument that the person that asked the question should have been ready to follow it up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I mean, if you're going to ask that question, you better have a follow-up question. And a follow-up question, like you asked the question, you got the hard part over with. You got the answer you wanted. Where's your follow-up?
Yeah. Well, you know, members of the media, you never know what they're going to do. I just think when you go into a situation, you got to be prepared. It's like during the Super Bowl, the whole Kyler Murray deal. When he went on with Dan Patrick, he had no idea. I mean, how could he not know that Dan Patrick was going to come up with such incredible questions as, okay, Kyler, what are you going to play, football or baseball?
He put that Gatorade bottle up there, though, didn't he?
And it was like they was asking him to solve world hunger. He had no answer for that question. I kind of feel the same way here about Dan Mellon. He had to have known that he was going to be asked this question.
And he would have been better to follow it up himself than to have to deal with this at SEC Media Days.
Well, he's going to have to deal with that again.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, and now the question is going to be, but you said this.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, isn't that when it all happened to Urban last year, right before Big Ten Media Days? Isn't that when he said something and then he got caught in a lie and then
got
another lie?
In a real, real lie.
Yeah, I mean, you would have been better off, Dan, just to either not answer the question or to answer it and then give a follow-up because now you're going to have 180 media types in one room gunning for you.
Well, and you know, we'll wrap things up, but Urban Meyer, the lie at Ohio State, former Florida coach, Jim McElwain lost his job because of a lie. Lied about death threats.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You would think that Dan Mullen would take a look at these two and say, I better be prepared for this answer because I don't want to sound one way and then my background shows that I've done something else. And again, this was at Mississippi State with Jeffrey Simmons. That has nothing
point,
to do with Florida.
He should be ready because one he worked under and the other one he succeeded.
No doubt. So what's coming up tonight?
A lot of college talk, actually. Going to talk about some of the folks I saw out at Sandalwood, Fletcher, kind of give a report. I'm actually like a proud papa right now with
Jeff
Sims stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He looked amazing.
He's going to be Florida all 4 years. He's going to stay four and beat him all four.
Easy, big dog. Easy. He didn't look that good.
Coleman's over here. It's going
to
happen.
If you're a Florida State fan heading back from that game, you've got to be beside yourself excited.
Mm-hmm.
And like I'm going to take my microphone and my opportunity to kind of tell people how this offseason has been for Jeff. And just how fulfilling it was.
Well,
to
I'm
going to
listen.
Tonight.
Can he? He can throw. He can run too.
He proved it tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did
both with his legs and his arm.
Everything he wanted to do, he did tonight.
You can talk about that right now.
Yes, sir. If you'll ever get out of here.
No, I want to stay. I want to talk about Dan Mullen
you can
on
stay
that
for the whole 2 hours.
Are you trying to tell me that you're going to interrupt my Dan Mullen conversation to bring up Florida State's future quarterback Jeff Sims?
What is going on here?
All right, that's it. We're out of time, folks. That'll do it for us. Blue back 7-9. On Friday night, second round coverage of the PGA Championship. Get you set for the weekend as well. Thank you to producer Matt LaVey. Denny and James come up right now.